conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Moderator ID accepted. All guests are currently unmuted. To mute all guests, press pound pound. For help with host options, press star 0. You will now be connected with the conference.
For remote folks, oh, like Ali who said he can't hear. Can you hear me, Ali?
Yes, it's better now.
Okay, good.
Again, welcome back. We got to get the ball rolling here. People on the online, they have to again dial in, I guess, Peter. People also, you want to send them an email? Chat? Okay, yeah. Pardon? Yeah. I don't know. The anyway, let the game start or whatever it is. And this is track. Okay, one logistic issue. I guess both of you, those of you are signed in for the dinner. There are some handouts here. In fact, while you are looking at tracks, you can also look at the menu here if you're hungry. Okay. And then the directions there. Anyone need a ride, let us know. I think all of you have rides there. Or I can take a few people, but yeah, hand it out. Yeah. Pardon? Yeah, let me. I can give a ride to one or two people. 6:30 6:30 is the time that we decided on. 6:30 there, which means that if you start around 6:15 here, that should be okay. So I will bring my van down here for anyone who needs to ride. It's only about 10-minute drive from here, but anyway, if you start at 6:15. And it's pretty good. Pardon?
Oh, yeah.
So,
it's free.
Anyone joined in? Okay, so let's see. 3:30. Steve, you can only hear Steve. He's speaking too loud. Ali. Yeah. You can't hear me? Ali, can you hear me?
Yes. It was fine.
Can you hear me? Okay, that's good. Okay, as the day goes by, the voice also goes up. Let's see. For Matthew West and Mike Bennett. Who's doing it? Okay, let's pull up the slides here. What do you need? This is the microphone. Yeah, this is just for. I don't know what other way to do it, okay? So you can use this one, or you can use that, or you can just use it.
Is this one mic'd up? This one appears to be.
I think so.
If I stand here, can people hear me on this one? Yeah, I might as well stick with that.
Can everyone hear Mike here? I know they can hear you, but what about online?
One, two, three. Okay, so, everybody hear me okay? Right, so, I better watch the time. Sorry? Fairly soft. Ah, what if I do, if I stand the other side of this microphone, then can you all hear me better now? Wonderful. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is report back on what we've been doing on track C, and then I'll hand over to Matthew, who will lead the question and answers part of this. So I'll be fairly brief on the first few things, just reiterating the track background. We really started with the basic understanding from software development methodology that there's two ways you can figure out the quality of something. You can figure it out afterwards, or you can try and find some way of building in some repeatable means of ensuring the quality of the ontology during the development stage, thereby saving a huge amount of rework and other unforeseen costs and things. And in the context of that, one constant theme in the way that we've structured this track and the way we've looked at things is to consider the different scenarios in which ontologies are used. So all the way from, as we saw in David's slide, an ontology that's a conceptual model to capture business terms and definitions and so on, which, like any conceptual model, should not take into account application constraints, versus an ontology that is to be used in a reasoning application. We often find that when people are using the word ontology, they're exclusively referring to one or the other, depending on how they use ontologies. So a significant part of the question of evaluating technologies is to first understand, is it one or the other or both? Are you doing a conceptual model and then deriving operational ontologies? Are you looking at evaluating an ontology that's used in a reasoning or querying application and so on? And what would be the different evaluation criteria and the different methodologies or the different positions in the methodology that those would relate to when we start to think about methodological considerations? So with that in mind, our basic objectives for this track was to evaluate the state of the art in ontology development methodologies. We've heard from a wide range of people who are using or developing different methodologies, both intrinsic and extrinsic, and look at what are the gaps that exist and what can be done with what's there at the moment. So our objectives were to examine those methodologies, think about things like upper ontologies and what role those play. We heard some good questions about those this morning. What about ontological patterns, other quality measures, and how to apply the intrinsic and extrinsic aspects that we've heard about in the other tracks into some form of development methodology. And also think about that in terms of a more industry standard style of quality assurance and methodology like ISO 9000 or the CMMI capability maturity model and so on. So we had two sessions based on the two varieties of ontologies that we talked about. Ontologies as a conceptual model, whether for integration or for onward development of applications from those, and ontologies as applications. And so we divided the sessions into one session on each of those, and we heard from a range of people on different quality measures that were applicable to those two distinct scenarios. So in the first session, we heard from several people on ontology development methodologies for integrating ontologies. A couple of key points that we've managed to draw out of those sessions. I'm sure there are others that we've missed, but we asked, you know, why a methodology in the first place? How methodology gives you something repeatable as distinct from, you know, relying on some smart person to get it right each time, the balance of costs and benefits between those two approaches, and so on.
considering ontologies as a computationally independent model, and what measures should or should not apply to those. Some of the things we heard about, excuse me, the tendency to create semantic silos if you develop ontologies in isolation where the meanings don't necessarily aren't necessarily reusable in other ontology-based applications, applying knowledge representation thinking to the development of these kinds of ontology, evidence-based ontology development and so on, and how one could develop a methodology around those kinds of high-level knowledge representation requirements, what choices you make in the upper ontology if you have one, having chosen upper ontology, how you ensure that the ontologies you develop are consistent with that, and what the considerations are around that and how to build that into a methodology. And looking also at existing methods and methodologies for data model development and other IT methodologies and how those can be adapted and applied to ontology development, and the considerations in those kind of methodologies around precision of terms versus the ability to present those terms to the business audience that needs to validate that kind of conceptual ontology. So a couple of observations on that. So the quality considerations that are applicable to an ontology as a conceptual model overlap but are distinct from the quality measures you'd apply for applications, the more mathematical models that you can apply to those, and the conceptual model itself, whether you then go on to create operational ontologies like we saw in David's presentation, or whether you're using the ontology as a conceptual model in a more conventional technological framework or architecture, so that the ontology is simply a better kind of business conceptual model than a Word document or a spreadsheet or some other kind of thing that people tend to use now. So there's those kind of considerations that we looked at and how to build those into a methodology for the development of the ontology itself. And what sort of measures can be applied then, having built in the approach to how you're building the ontology, what you're trying to do, which of the measures should apply? So consistency, of course, applies the same whether it's a conceptual or an operational ontology. Things like upper ontologies, limited use in operational ontology perhaps, but in a conceptual ontology, they are often the key to firming up the intended meaning or the interpretation of the different terms that you then define in your ontology. How to select other existing ontologies that will fit into the framework that you're using, that are consistent with the upper ontologies that you're using, and so on. And I think one point that came through a couple of times, actually, as part of thinking of the meaning of terms for a conceptual ontology, how do you ground the concepts? You know, concepts are grounded in law and other, you know, accounting and other established types of meaning, rather than simply being self-asserted as part of building the ontology. So how those are grounded in prior art, in published work and academic ontologies and so on. So those are some of the observations that we drew out of the first session. Then the second session, here we focused on an ontology as an application, so a reasoning-based application, such as something you'd use in Protégé or something like the stuff we saw just now. What are the methodologies for developing that kind of ontology and for evaluating those? And, of course, there are a lot more tools that can evaluate the kind of mathematical things you want to establish about that kind of ontology. So we looked at the use of some generalized frameworks for evaluation of that kind of ontology, where the use case fits in as an application. Of course, you've got well-defined requirements which you can then evaluate your ontology against. Looking at external components, reuse of other ontologies and so on, and how they can be developed and tested in a modular way, and again, the kind of evaluation requirements around those. Again, another couple of points. So in developing an ontology that's used for reasoning, you know, it's built specifically for reasoning over, so certain things should be built into that, DL safe rules and that kind of thing. Simpler semantic modelers would be used if you were not trying to do reasoning. So it's knowing what is the relevant level of rigor with which things need to be defined in your chosen ontology language for a reasoning-based application. And what were the ontology development practices that would lead to a greater quality in reasoning-based ontologies? So again, looking at the intrinsic and extrinsic properties from the different tracks and how to apply those in the relevant part of the ontology development life cycle. So the life cycle should take into consideration the architecture in which it will be used, what the reasoning component will consist of. You know, is it going to be one of the one of the Protégé plugins, or what sort of component you're using, and what the considerations are for developing into that architecture. So again, a couple of observations that came out of that. Like any other development process, there should be a number of stages in the developments of that. Many of those can be adapted from traditional information systems development processes and simply adapted to the development of an ontology as part of an application, and indeed the development of the application as a whole. So again, there's different levels of requirements identification, looking at what are the required capabilities of the system that the ontology is a component of. Is it a small part of a much larger information system, or where does it fit into that, and what capabilities you need in the ontology itself, and how to build those into the development of that ontology, starting with high-level requirements like the need for consistency and so on, and also looking at the more typical detailed development requirements like naming standards conformity and, you know, design convention conformance and so on. And so, again, the same stages that would apply to any other kind of development where you have a conceptual model, logical model, and physical model, there's the equivalent for that in how you develop the ontology application. Again, as I say, the architectural decisions in choosing what ontological commitments the ontology needs to make. Do you use a 4D or a 3D plus 1 type of ontology framework, and what kinds of partitioning do you need, and so on for that particular requirement. There are choices to make in the ontology language. There's OWL, there's other kinds of language, what's appropriate for a given environment, and so on. And just as an observation, there doesn't seem to be that much evidence of that in current practice. It's more a case of starting by writing something in OWL or CL. So we think there is a lot of opportunity to firm up the positioning of that within a broader life cycle that starts from the requirements and works through a formal development methodology for developing ontology-based reasoning applications. So in summary, we seem to have got a kaleidoscope of all the pieces of a possible methodology. Maybe a methodology is the wrong word, because it depends on where the ontology fits into the life cycle. Maybe you've got, as we have with FIBO, both a conceptual ontology and a number of operational ontologies. Those should all fit in within one life cycle. So we've got a lot of the pieces. We've seen a lot of the validation techniques. We've seen a lot of considerations on the semantics end about the use of partitions and, you know, all those kinds of things. We don't see the methodology itself or a set of methodologies, but we seem to have all the pieces, and it's a very useful framework to what it would take to develop some kind of formal set of methodologies that take into account the different roles of ontologies in these different parts of the development life cycle, including perhaps more of a focus on some of the upper ontologies and use of partitions and things than we may have seen before. And again, a lot of very good elements in the evaluation framework. So some of the tools like OOPS and OQUERE and OntoQA and OntoClean and so on, all the pieces are there, and we just need to look at all the choices that have been made in the development of ontologies in these different scenarios and try and fit those within the relevant kinds of development process flow for that, whether it's an agile type of process or a more of a unified process, how the different pieces fit together so that you have a industrial strength quality framework for that kind of thing. A major part of that, which is always worth mentioning, is that on the conceptual end of things, whether you're creating the conceptual ontology just as a conceptual ontology to inform integration or mapping or conventional technology model-driven development, or whether you're going on to derive operational ontologies from that. With an operational ontology, with any development, you start with a conceptual model. So the same rule applies somewhere in any development methodology, which is you've got to have business subject matter experts validate that what you think you've modeled does actually match how they see the world. And that requires some interesting workarounds in terms of how you present the formalism of an ontology to an audience that's well-versed in their business but should not need to learn semantic technology techniques in order to understand and validate your model. So whatever the different steps and different methodologies are, there's a role for business subject matter expert validation if one's to ensure that the ontology is robust and reusable and complete. So I think in conclusion, we've validated the need for a methodology. We've validated that it's not one, but perhaps a set of methodological components that would fit into different kinds of workflow for different kinds of development. And we've identified both in this track and across the summit generally and in the hackathons and so on, a lot of the pieces, and so we're starting to see what a methodology might look like, but it's not there yet. So basically we need to have a better understanding of the relationships between requirements at different levels, different kinds of requirements, how the low-level requirements support higher-level requirements, and so on, and come up with ontology development methodologies that make use of the best of the existing information system development life cycles, particularly the separation of concerns between conceptual and logical and physical. So, for example, you shouldn't impose physical ontology processing requirements onto the conceptual model. That just weakens its role as a conceptual model. And similarly, one shouldn't simply start at the physical level if you want something that is not a standalone application but is maintainable, or in particular if you want something that's an industry standard or an ontology you want others to reuse. So we think there's a role for a clearer understanding of the architecture of ontology development and the different aspects of architecture in general and development methodology in general that are relevant for those, all the way through to the ontological commitments, the language choices, and the more physical aspects of the application itself. So with that very broad summary, I'll hand over to Matthew, who will lead us in some questions based on these three questions here.
Hello, yes, that's working. I'd like to try something a little bit different with these questions than we've done previously. Peter, I'm hoping you'll help me. So just listen up for a moment. What I'd like us to do is, if you're online in particular, I'd like you to give an answer to the question in the chat. So just picking the first question, what I'd like you to think of is what your Twitter would be, or what your elevator speech would be, depending on what generation you are, to answer the question. So why have an ontology? Why would you have an ontology development methodology? Or if you prefer, why you wouldn't have one? And then we'll see what we get. Now, for people who are in the room and not on the chat, just shout it out. You know, it's only going to be a couple of sentences, and Peter will put it in the chat for us. And then that's the idea. And then we'll try and pick it up on here. And we've got about, 5 or 6 minutes or so. So we'll just go with the first question, and we'll have a look at what comes up and see if there's anything that we want to discuss that comes out of that, or whether we just think, yes, those are good things that we can capture and use as we go forward. So anyone here going to start us off? Why would we have a methodology? Yes, Todd. Makes it easier to teach people how to make ontologies. Pavithra. To develop a repeatable pattern. Doug? Hang on, whoa, hold it. Peter is... Oh, it's already on the chat. Excellent, thank you. That's even better then. Yes, Todd. Yes, also making our current implicit methodologies explicit. Yeah? That's another one for Todd. But making our current implicit methodologies, because of course we have them, explicit, and therefore reusable and repeatable, I hope. Yes, to Fabian.
Fabian.
No. He's going to shout. He's going to write it, and we can all read it. Otherwise, yes. Okay, I've got it. It makes the methodology repeatable and reusable, but within a group of collaboration. Sorry, that was it. Yeah, thank you. Ah, Ray is going up, taking it in turns here. Terry.
I put an interrupt there.
Excellent.
I think the problem I have is that there's more than one ontology development methodology, and you may not be able to select just one because you need to know why you have an ontology.
Right, indeed so. And we're not saying only one. The idea isn't necessarily that there's only one.
You may use more than one.
Yeah, absolutely. No, okay. Yes. Framework for completeness and, of course, evaluation checks. Yes. Completeness and evaluation checks. Yeah. Okay, anything else? That's, yes, Ray.
I wrote up there
for consistency and quality and design. Excellent. And that was it. Okay, that's good. Let's try the next one. What should an ontology development methodology cover? So what's your shopping list of things that you think it should cover? I think it's worth distinguishing between a methodology and the sort of life cycle framework that we've got in the communique, because that's a what you need to do. A methodology is how you're going to do it. It's not just what. Are there any things that for Vistra? Okay. Tools. We've got someone coming through. The frame of analysis, the epistemology used, and the intended purpose. The scope of the ontology, yes. I mean, another thing that I would add is that where you're using an upper ontology, that provides you with a framework for analysis. So it's the way that you do the analysis using a particular upper ontology when you're looking at a particular domain. For me, the main interest in an upper ontology isn't what it does structurally, but it's how it frames the way you think about a domain. Oh, I need to... Oh, okay. We could... Sorry, okay. So it's that... and I'm trying to remember what I just said. Yes. So the utility use of upper ontologies in the methodology around an upper ontology as a way of analysing a domain. Yes, it's you need to have a methodology for how you use the upper ontology to analyze a domain. What? Yeah. Yes, it should cover how you analyze a domain using an upper ontology. Write it down. Don't think. Yes, that's a good idea. If you want to speak, please raise your hand, and we'll if you're online. It seems to be okay. There we go. Ah, right. Doug, yes. Okay, yes, okay. Okay, that's good. If anyone was online, Doug was saying what he has already written, so you will already have seen that. One of the things I noticed there is just how detailed that list was in terms of, you know, the level of detail it was coming down to, which is what a methodology needs to do. Yeah. Well.
So just anticipating that there will be multiple development methodologies, I think what would be helpful would be to determine the kinds of tasks that would be performed, and for each task, you know, what kind of artifacts would be produced, what kind of individuals are needed to produce those artifacts and do that task. This is well along in the lines of how software development methodologies are created. They divide them up into the individual types of tasks. And you can even, there's even a tool where you can mix and match these and create your own methodology. So if we could identify the kinds of tasks, then we could, you know, facilitate the development of a whole range of methodologies for ontologies of different kinds.
So using the language of process to describe the process by
which
you develop
the
ontology.
Yeah, the process language. Now, that would be something that would be really valuable. I think it would be less valuable for us to come out with a specific ontology than to come out with one that would specify these kinds of tasks. And I think people have been providing examples of these. If we capture them, it would be really nice. But I think that's what we should focus on.
Okay, thank you. And one thing that I know you always need with a methodology is an improvement methodology to fix it when it stops working. Because that's the thing that gets methodologies a bad name. I was expecting someone to say, you know, methodologies never work or something like that. You can always have a bad methodology. But if you've got an improvement methodology, such as
PMN level 4,
right, then you've got no excuse. Okay, sorry, yes, sorry.
Did you capture that, Peter? Yeah.
Terry.
Not confuse methodology with the tool set that enforces or encourages a particular methodology.
Right.
They're distinctly different, and frequently the tools are bad, even though the methodology in theory is fine.
Yeah. Need to distinguish between the tool set and the methodology. They're not the same.
Could I add something to that came out of the hackathon, which is that if you start with knowing what are the things you want to evaluate about an ontology and then go shopping for the tools to do that and see what the gaps are, which will throw up requirements for some kind of manual review for the things the tools don't do rather than when the tools drive the process.
Okay. Okay, so let's move on to question 3 then. How do you know if an ontology development methodology is delivering? It meets the requirements. You're getting the ontology right first time. Sorry, Hans, that was...
People are using the ontology.
If people are using the ontology that you created, yes, that's pretty good. Anything else there? How about because it evaluates well, and you don't have so many errors to pick up. Sorry, Kalisha.
Oh,
it's okay. Sorry.
Well, there.
One thing that happens when you have a methodology is that one person can suddenly be stopped and someone else knows exactly what to do next.
That's really good. Continuity. Yeah. That's
also things like manageability when you have a large project.
Yeah.
And
scalability.
Manageability, scalability, and efficiency too. I mean, a good methodology would produce the ontology less expensively.
Yeah, in fact, the repeatability, I heard. Leo.
A considerably good and useful
ontologies on multiple projects, yeah. Yeah, repeatability. Doug. So consistency first time is my summary of that, if that's okay for the chat log. Okay.
I think we may have to probably wind up soon. Yeah, but I want to make a comment here, you know, just in the moderator can just have the mic. Now, if you look at this ontology development as a design problem, there's a lot of work done in engineering design over the last few decades. Be interesting to look at that literature in a way, because this is a design. I mean, Boeing 777, as people are showing Boeing, I guess, in the recent past. So that has been designed and built. Again, there's a methodology that they followed. What was that? Okay. Anyway, with that, we move to the next track, which is track B. And who is going to... Okay, so we have, this is 4 o'clock on slides, okay. Track D. We went to about half an hour or so.
Totally. Everything. The whole package deal.
Okay, this is track D, software environments and evaluating ontologies. And I'm basically going to be introducing the next two parts of the program, right? So hopefully I won't take too long. Our mission statement here was to provide this venue for basically collecting together what the state of the art is in systems that evaluate ontologies. And in the process, hopefully by comparing them, we would start looking at what's missing. And what is in common in these tools, and start a dialogue about what these tools will actually be providing, hopefully, ultimately. And as I say, we're just collecting together information about these tools, and particularly emphasizing those that are open efforts, and the ones that were available publicly, as opposed to something that might be more, less easily available. Although there certainly are tools that are quite good that are proprietary. So then we actually also, acted to foster these hackathon clinics and assist them because they were also involved in the same activity of trying to, get some more experience with these tools, with the evaluation theme, and there will be presentations on those that will be coming up later on. So moving on to slide 3. So what were the basic work products? Well, we actually have a synthesis page. Is it possible to link to that? Okay, I guess better not. All right, so there's a synthesis page for this. And we had two virtual sessions in which we invited the individuals to talk about their tools and environments that do software evaluation. So there was one in February, one in March, and they covered a wide range of the tools and environments that are now on the in the survey, which will be which is the next item here that we constructed this survey that I'll be showing you in a moment, and there'll be a separate talk about the survey, the software support for ontology quality and fitness, which I'll be talking about more in another session for that. And as I say, we provided support for the Hackathon Clinics program. Contributed to the communique. All right. So moving on to slide 4. So here's the survey form. Notice that there is a division here into kind of life cycle phases. So there's a so one of the things we did was to develop a kind of ontology life cycle, starting with exploration, then management, design, build, validate, integration and use, and maintenance. Right. So this is not to suggest that this is the methodology, but only that as a way of dividing up the questions, this is a way of splitting up a large number of questions into parts according to these categories. So they appear in the survey as tabs. You just click on one of the tabs, and then it'll show you the questions for that. And there's also this one section general that's just general information about the tool or environment. Let's see, on slide number 5, you can see a summary of the survey results. Actually, that's not quite how it looks. It's a little more colorful than that. One of the things you can do, if you can go to that page, you can click on these little arrows, and it will sort that column. It begins with all of the questions sorted. Unfortunately, that means that those nice categories with the tabs disappear, because now you're just looking at all the questions in one big list in order. So that's a bit unfortunate, but I think I'm going to try to fix this particular survey summary, so that you can also look at the questions in by category, by the life cycle phase, as well as by just the question alphabetically. But then you can also click on these others, and as a result, you can just see, kind of immediately all of the features that a particular tool has all listed together. And, of course, you can also do comparisons across the various tools. So that's these are the survey results, and these are the responses we've gotten so far. I believe it's 13 different tools and environments. Hopefully we'll be getting some more later on, because AntoClean is not yet in this list, and it believe that will be coming up soon. Back to the slide 6. So the So we have this page, and it's a wiki page, so it's one of these, the survey is actually dynamic in that you can continually add to it, change it, and then of course the summary will automatically adapt to that. It's also on Semantic Media Wiki, and we'll be talking about that a little later on, and that it's actually semantically enabled. So, slide 7. Now there are the questions for discussion today in this part. So, what are the greatest barriers today to having various individuals, such as systems architects, system designers, software engineers, employ ontologies in their work, and not just implicitly use them, but explicitly use ontologies and of course, either select them from existing ontologies or develop them. So that's one question that we have for the summit today. The next question is, what features need to be improved or added to the tools to kind of reduce these barriers? What you should probably do is look through all of those various questions, which the various questions are really more like tasks in developing an ontology. You know, you look at all these questions. Each one represents, you know, does the tool support this particular kind of task in building an ontology? So in a sense, this survey is already kind of a first cut at the kinds of tasks that would be needed in ontology development methodology. But just in general, what features could these tools, you know, improve upon in order to remove these barriers? And finally, what else are needed on the software tools and these environments to help improve the process? And of course, and hopefully that would also mean improving the quality of these kinds of applications. So I guess we'll just move on to the discussion. So let's try to get a dialogue going here again. Yes.
In answer to your first question, I would say, first of all, the tools I'm aware of, you still need to be an ontologist to use the tools. And I think, so the first answer is that have tools where the user interface and the way you use it doesn't require you to be a fully trained ontologist. It could ask questions maybe in control vocabulary or something and say, you know, you could have wizards, things like that, which aren't so laborious to use.
That sounds like a great suggestion. Can we capture that then? Todd?
Well, first of all, I'd really like to know the answer to the first question, if you tell me. But regarding the tool thingies, what might be of better importance in terms of sequencing how things end up supporting the first question is if some of the IDEs for, say, software engineers or architects incorporated some of the features from ontology or ontological analysis themselves. So the software engineer, for instance, is not necessarily developing an ontology, but the IDE would embed some of the prerequisites of an ontology development itself to force the engineers to behave in a fashion that's closer to what an ontologist might do. Is that too fuzzy? That is, I would like to embed some of the best practices of ontology development into software design, into architecture.
Enterprise architects have to develop conceptual information modeling as part of any framework that we follow. like the way you're talking about methodology, enterprise architects have frameworks. And in each framework, we do have to develop conceptual information model, and that's what ontology and the scale of ontology that you'll talk varies. I mean, whether you're addressing the entire, when we say enterprise, we mean an organization or an agency or, you know, a business line. And when we talk about ontology in this group, it's, you know, a particular thing, a particular domain. So it's the scale of the scope of the concern is what we are talking about. It's part of enterprise architecture.
Yes, that's what an enterprise architect is supposed to do. However, they do not apply a lot of the analysis that you might apply in developing an ontology, and that is a shortcoming. So
No. It's your assumption there. Having worked in enterprise architecture, we spend years doing analysis of the environment and how, you know, the enterprise that we call, which is, you know, how it works. So, I mean, it's extensive analysis sometimes rather than, you know, coming. So I disagree with that.
Okay. Should be.
Actually, there's a question for you from the on the chat. Oh, no, sorry, Steve.
Oh.
So are you answering it? And we're running.
So I was just going to follow the earlier point as well. And so, yes, you know, as part of enterprise architecture, you create a small O ontology, a conceptual model. You know, even if you don't document it, your application has an ontology. What's needed is tools that allow you to use at least some of the expressive power of first-order logic, as, you know, so even just described in basic set theoretic terms, but with the modeling tool capabilities of something like a UML tool. So we've got very good tools for modeling solutions. Seems to be a huge blind spot not to have the same kind of tools for modeling the problem space. Even if you don't use some of the more complex things like OWL restrictions and so on, just getting architects to be able to use a UML type of interface to drag and drop classes of thing. And, you know, you can even, this doesn't exist, of course, but you could define high level of abstractions with ontology design patterns, like, you know, what are the necessary facts of a contract, a transaction, a commitment, and so on. Drag and drop those onto the page, just the same as you do with UML tooling, and then be able to produce OWL. I mean, it's very easy to describe that, but nobody's built a very simple tool that would do it so far.
Thank you, Michael. You pointed out, reminded me of what a possible answer to number one is. And from my experience, one of the barriers is UML. In that, especially for software engineers, they give you a UML diagram, and they say, look. And I say, okay, what? Oh, there it is. They feel that they have conveyed more information in the diagram that a less biased observer might agree with. So UML can obfuscate the fact that you have not communicated what you thought you were communicating. And that literally, I believe, is one of the large barriers.
Very much so. And, you know, the UML heritage of everything is a class. And so people will use a UML class to describe a real thing, but it doesn't have the logical grounding of an OWL class, and it doesn't really have any clearly, particularly obvious logical grounding, because it depends how the person has chosen to use it. It's quite ubiquitous, precisely because we're not building those kind of tools for OWL yet.
Excuse me. I think I agree that there is a scalability issue and the actual methodology issue with the conceptual information model between ontology that is used in knowledge management and, you know, artificial intelligence and these areas, semantic web technologies areas versus EA, the scope or the environment. There is plenty that we can discuss and bridge the gap there. I agree. It is addressed. It's a matter of interoperability there.
Yeah, I think training. So, for example, for question one, you need ontological science and engineering training, formal training. You can try to get that with experience, but you have to work with somebody who has the experience and knowledge to begin with. One of the issues is that database folks and object-oriented systems folks, they think they're doing semantics before you come to them and say, here's an ontology, let's create an ontology that actually expresses the semantics. So sometimes that's a hurdle. You have to make sure they understand that what you're doing is not what ontology is.
The DoD built, and this is available, a BPMN, Business Process Modeling Notation Ontology. BPMN is an OMG product, and this is the analytical conformance class, which makes it smaller. So there, and it's being worked through the OMG process now. So there is a business process modeling capability to build a real business process model, not the kind of activity diagrams that are in UML, a real business process model, Rudler Bridge. And there is an ontology under the DoD DM2, which is part of the DODAF, the DoD Architecture Framework. And that ontology gets access to, they have way too many product types, but 52 other views, which do include the complete UML set of views. So there's everything there sitting on top of an ontology necessary to build real business process models and analyze business process models and then use that as a methodology also for creating these ontologies, and most especially since there are at least three companies who could execute these business process models, use them to access the real instance data that your ontology should be pointing to. All of this stuff is there. We intend to use it on FIBO, but it's also available for others to use.
Can we move on to the next question? What features need to be improved and added? We've already. But any other? Well, UML is really effective in the software engineering community. They did a good job of that. But anyway, I just finished teaching a course in algorithms, and it's interesting that all, you know, educated computer scientists are expected to know the formal semantics of programs, you know, but they're not expected to know the formal semantics of data, which is interesting, meaning ontologies. It's not expected that people know this, and yet it's fully expected that they know the mathematics behind programs. So it's kind of an interesting gap in the current educational system.
I think one interesting feature, especially since we've talked about requirements, is tool support for better traceability and provenance, particularly different design decisions. A lot of people have talked, you know, too, about, you know, having early like ontological commitments, but then later on having trade-offs with respect to the implementation in a particular language, and to be able to know, you know, how these requirements are kind of, if there's trade-offs or if and then a requirement gets changed, whether decisions then depended on that. I think that's something that we're missing.
One of the big things that's a problem in general is documenting change so that the documentation stays up to date with the current version, and you know, you have current documentation for the current version as well as documentation for previous versions, and that you can actually manage that and the whole thing's consistent.
I think something that's missing in the tools now, I mentioned about being able to drag and drop, and what I was describing was, you know, we talk about UML, what the real advantage is not in UML, but in the kind of things UML's tools do, which is being able to drag and drop stuff on the page and rearrange it to make nice business-facing views. And what's missing is to break away from the limitations of UML itself while using that kind of tooling to be able to create two kinds of view, because any conceptual model has to be seen by two completely distinct audiences. One is the people who have to implement against it, so the technical audience have to see the complete technical features of the model, and the other is the business audience. So, for instance, being able to take Scott's pref label or other such annotations and make those the label on a business-facing diagram with spaces in the names and everything in plain English and so on, and with being able to hover and see the definition and all that kind of thing. You know, all of this has been done in UML tools, and it just, you know, we just see the same kind of thing but adapted to OWL and SCOS and so on. And why not also be able to, you know, when you try and do a non-conforming UML action on a UML tool, it stops you. There's nothing stopping you trying to do a non-conformant OWL activity. So, you know, sorry, that class is inconsistent with that class, kindly take it away. You know, all of these kinds of things should be able to be done for ontology modeling as they have been done for modeling of solutions and things.
Well, Michael, you triggered a thought in my mind to help clarify what I tried to express earlier in terms of the tools, and an answer to overcome the barrier is, if you had an ontology embedded in your IDE, when a software engineer came along and tried to do make a student a subclass of person, it would say, you can't do that.
If you can embed your ontology partitions to enforce that kind of discipline, like enforce the discipline that you've, you know, your chosen partitions, like
exactly.
Relative things as a thing in a role, you mustn't make it a subclass of a company or a person, you know, and whatever else, as we saw in the earlier sessions, whatever the upper ontology commitments you've made,
are reflected in the actions you can take in the tool.
Using a meta-ontology that drives the tool to tell you what are allowed or not allowed under those philosophies.
This gets to Ken's notion of tasks, how you can constrain the tasks with the actions that can be taken as part of a particular task.
Just a quick reaction to that. If people are using something like LDL, which has implicit in it the open world assumption, then you're asking it to do something that violates the open world assumption, basically, by trying to constrain a person's behavior. The open world assumption would say anyone can say anything about anything, and if they want to declare a person subclass of something else.
Excuse me, he has a point. That is, when you talk about different concepts, here you are modeling using OWL, and in traditional world we use, you know, UML. It's the difference in the way, but even in traditional world, it's not UML alone. We use, you know, structured analysis and design. We have ERD and all sorts of different modeling techniques, which is slightly different from the other, but if you model in a couple of modeling modeling tools, you know you have to understand the mathematics and the method used behind those modeling concepts. So whether existing any one of the ones in software engineering or in ontology or in enterprise architecture, do all the models interoperate? Do all of them look the same? No, it depends on the methodology we used. It all, you know, it has its own representation.
We have a question on the chat. Jim? Star 7? Jim? Press star 7. Jim, can you press star 7 and start talking?
Let's try that. Hello? Am I on now?
You're on.
I thought all I needed to do was go off mute. Sorry about that. This is a bit of a follow-up to what Todd was saying and alluding to, I think. Is there's a distinction here between the ontology that is guiding the development of the system and the ontology that we are developing with the IDE. So when I look at the tool, and that's what I'd like to have, some of the things that Todd was mentioning are things that support a consistency with what currently is there. So if I am building an ontology and I've made some ontological commitments, I would like to see some support for those going on. That is different than looking at the ontology I currently have developed. In other words, I see a strong role in the IDE for ontology as design philosophy of a system, and that actually applies to IDEs that are building things other than ontologies. So I would love to see ultimately a UML tool that for folks who are familiar with architectural frameworks such as Department of Defense architectural framework and some of the others that speak to having an all view with data descriptions and such, having those be well supported with ontology information, even if you're not going to implement as a part of a runtime executable, say the LDL file that you're actually trying to build. So that gets a little bit back to what Todd was saying, I think, and he can correct me, of course, as he usually does, that if I have making a new statement in my LDL development or L2RL that seems to violate a principle, for example, I'm treating something as an abstract thing when previously I've treated its parents as physical things, running some of those automatic consistency checks just as we do automatic consistency checks in other types of software and data models. It's not that we need to do the universal, but I think there are little things that could be done in there. The main point I wish to make and get feedback on from the panel is, do you see room for or a reason for distinguishing between ontology as design philosophy or worldview of the system apart from the specifics of developing a particular ontology that's going to be used in an application?
Could you capture that in the chat, Jim?
Okay, I've got a bit of that in the chat already. It's 1631. Would it be good to have tool support for the distinction between ontology as a worldview, philosophy of the system, and the development of the actual implementation level knowledge representation ontology? So I'm terrible at capturing anything that I say, but that's probably the best of it.
It sounds like it's a little like the distinction between your conceptual, logical, and physical models that have already been part of data design for databases.
I think what we are overlooking here is in traditional software engineering world, we have structured analysis and design techniques, and we have object-oriented analysis and design techniques as an example. In ontology development, we haven't defined standard analysis and design techniques. So I think everybody follows some kind of a methodology. Maybe that's what we should do.
Thanks. We're running out of time, so we're going to have to move on.
Okay.
So it's.
Thank you, Ken. Well, I guess we go to the next session. You're getting there. Website. Anyone doing website here? On the phone? Ali is going to do that? Okay, Ali, you're on. So
hello?
To do slides, I guess.
Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yeah, we can hear you, but all right, okay.
All right, and is the VNC running? Can I just call out the slides and go through it asynchronously?
I'm handling the slides.
Okay, thank you. All right, so I'm just going to take just a very few brief minutes to present the work that was done on the website. The team was particularly, Marcella Vigetti did a huge amount of work along with Ken Bukowski, Peter Yim, Tejas Parikh, Jinya Yamidi, and Soledad Bonzini. Those guys did a ridiculous amount of work in the past couple of weeks to get the website up and running. So slide two, please. The mission for the website was to create the Ontology Summit 2013 website on the new Ontolog Peripheral Semantic Media Wiki that was being deployed at the same time. And the goal really was to organize the summit content in a way that encourages and facilitates access to and reuse of the material. So this means making it more intuitive, making it more machine readable, and more navigable. The second mission was to use some subset of the ICOM vocabulary annotate the content that is produced on the Summit website. The ICON vocabulary is an OASIS ontology standard that has been developed for describing collaborative work. The third point is we were aiming to use these annotations to provide or enable new functionality and views in terms of accessing, querying the resources, events, and people that were involved in the summit and are consequently hosted on the website. And a corollary to all of that was to also exploit functionality that comes with the Semantic Media Wiki, which means developing and deploying some forms to capture this material as people are adding it to the website. So in the upload process, it's already annotated with the vocabulary. So going on to slide 3, this is a snapshot of one small part of the ICOM vocabulary that we use. I am not going to go into this. This is just for your reference. I believe Ken is going to be talking about the work that he did in mapping it in greater detail tomorrow, so I'll leave that to him. Just going to slide 4, some of the highlights. Based on the work that Ken did in mapping the ICOM to the Semantic Media Wiki, properties were chosen to represent ICON concept relations and attributes. The templates and categories represent the ICOM concepts, and forms are what allow page creations. So all these bolded things on the page, these are sort of concepts within the Semantic Media Wiki world, and they are what contain the mapped ICOM elements. Going to slide 5, this shows an overview, a very high-level overview of where all the content is coming from. Heavy use was made of transclusion, so we weren't duplicating the website content, but rather processing it and inserting content that is hosted on another website directly into the Semantic Wiki. At the same time, there was a massive effort by Peter and the the PSNW team, Tejas and Shinya and others, to migrate the Ontolog Wiki into this new format. And of course, all of the resources, well, not all of them, but the ones that were within scope for this project were annotated according to that ICOM vocabulary, mapped by Ken. Going to page 6, this shows just a snapshot of the wiki as it was, that is then migrated to the Semantic Media Wiki. And again, Tejas and Peter were absolutely instrumental in performing this migration over the past couple of months. The next slide, slide 7, this is the new look after the migration. So slide 6 showed you the old version. Slide 7 is the new version. In this version, for example, people are recognized as being people, and workspaces are recognized as being people, and the various types of resources are then classified according to their type as defined in the background ontology. Slide 8, we also made use of the skinning functionality within the Semantic Media Wiki environment. And in order to provide some continuity with last year's website, and also to make it maybe more amenable to a broader user base, they decided to use the Misty Look skin provided by Satish Bala. And Soza Sanzini did extensive adaptations to make the skin fit our needs. Among other things, we changed the image that you see on this slide. The next slide is a pretty exciting and important new step for the development of both the Summit website and, I believe, in general, the Ontolog PSMW. Specifically now, we can also export each page. We can also export all the entities hosted on a particular page into RDF format. What this means is that a lot of the Summit content, at least now, is machine readable and discoverable by outside tools and people who are interested in. And we're moving towards 5-star linked data viability. So I think right now it's about at the 4-star level. And what's missing are things like a Sparkle endpoint and so on. And all of these are functionalities that are supported by the Semantic Media Wiki. And Ken will go into this in greater detail tomorrow, but these are additional extensions that need to be installed, tested, and validated. But it's definitely within reach, but it was beyond scope for the work that was done in preparation for the summit. Slide 10 now. This just shows the a snapshot of how the transclusion is occurring. So this mission statement is lifted from the actual summit webpage that was being developed separately and included, I think, dynamically right into this webpage. So we were not maintaining two resources. We don't have to worry about keeping them in sync, transcluding, basically provides that functionality for us. I would say for free, but the amount of work that went to actually making this feature viable would make that statement untrue. Now, slide 11, given the fact that we now have annotated many of the different entities on these web pages, we can run queries. So we can see who attended which conferences, we can see what types of assets are stored, and, well, really, it's open to whatever query you can dream up. Now, the TSMW provides a particular way of writing effectively Sparkle queries and specifying the result format. But I believe the syntax, at least for the native, the built-in ability to query pages, is a variation or sort of a wiki-like dialect. Now, slide 12 lists some of the points that still need to be worked on and improved. Specifically, the workflow that was developed as part of the generation of this website needs to be improved significantly. There are some bottlenecks in terms of embedding concepts within concepts and having to rely on forms. A programmatic way of also maybe reading in the metadata that might exist in PDF or other formats would help significantly. Also, the on-blog participant pages could benefit from having increased semantics. The full semantic query capability has not yet been implemented, so further work would require to access information about the events, presentations, and so on. Along the vein of workflow, developing the deploying new forms and templates to capture different aspects of the content that's being uploaded. And also a future goal would be to actually also incorporate the ontology of ontology evaluation vocabulary into the website. One last note, slide 13 now. Sort of almost literally at the last minute or at the last day, a request was made to create a pretty looking site to accompany the PR release for the summit so that external users would be able to see this. This was not within the original time plan of the summit, as really the goal was to get the website up and running in time for the symposium. And really, the dedication and hard work of our colleagues in Argentina, specifically Marcela and Soledad, who were able to create the pretty website spending last year's work within literally 24 hours, just in time for the press release. So a huge, huge thank you goes to them and, of course, Peter for making this happen. And I believe that is it. I'd open the floor to any questions, if there are. So I would also like to, one more time, thank the entire team that worked on this effort, Marcela, Ken, Peter, Shinya, Sanjit, and Soledad. Thanks. And then for your reference, if you're interested in, if you're interested, the slides 15, 16, 17, 18 provide a more detailed view of sort of the underlying vocabulary and organization of the web.
Yeah, that I think the Ontolog website is an excellent piece of work. So anyway, thank you all for doing it.
Yeah, can we encourage you to go on the website, play around with a few features, and see what it is. It might also be a nice model for different labs or projects to use this type of functionality that's really been pioneered by Peter and the TSMW team.
Okay. Thank you again. In the interest of time, we're going to move to the next speaker, Amanda.
I'm going to be super quick with these. I'm going to talk about the community library and reference resource. This is something we did last year as well, doing it a little bit more and differently this year. Let's see. Going to slide 2. Oops, let me see if I can move this doohickey so it's not blocking the slide. There we go. Where is the library? It's hosted on Zotero.org. Very quickly, that is an open source reference research management tool out of George Mason. So there's two ways to get to the library. One is to use the link on this slide. The other is to go to Zotero.org, groups, and et cetera. You can see on the slide how to find it. We have the Ontology Summit 2013 group. Go into that group and go to the group library. You do not need to log in to view and browse the library. Slide 3, this is going to be easier for people at home to look at than people here. This is a snapshot of the what you'll find if you're not logged in and you go to that front page of the library. Just very quickly, it's got some sub-collections over on the left-hand side and some tags you can search on, and then a list of some of the items themselves from the top level that show there. Slide 4, focusing in on the sub-collections. This is just a snapshot of the top level ones right now. I just want to call attention to a couple of features that you might not realize at first when you look at this this tool. One is that it has multiple inheritance. Single items can be in multiple collections without duplication, so the item only exists once in the library. But you can basically you're tagging when you're foldering here. It's kind of like Gmail that way, right? So you can put it in as relevant to a different various topics and discussions without clogging things up too much. These particular sub-collections that are in there right now are ones that I added in response to how material was presented or how people were thinking about if people were clustering around a certain topic talking about resources related to a certain topic, that I might have added a sub-collection for that. And just an interface note that arrows next to a folder icon mean that there are sub-collections below that collection. So you click on the arrow to display it. And to give an example, or a couple of examples, if the one that I've got pointed to here for the hackathons and clinics activities, there's a sub-collection for each one. when it says by track, there's a sub-collection for each track. And by communique reference, well, I'll tell you more about that in a second. The basic functions here, it's both a library and a bibliographic collection tool. And what I mean by that is for digital items that are in the public domain, they are actually copied or can be. Yes, Todd? Oh, can you hear me now? Okay. Yes? Okay. so the capability is in there to actually attach the item to the listing. So for many of the materials, that's been done and they're already in there. And also, if they're downloadable from a URL, that URL can be live linked in, so you've got sort of virtual library potential. Bibliographic functions for both the public and the non-public materials, all the bibliographic information is collected, and you can export that in your choice of formats. It's got a huge range supported. And you can export it by sub-collection. So if you just want a quick bibliography on one of those topics that's got its own collection, you can export and dump that out right out. And also, the way that the items, individual items appear in there, is a parent item that's with the listing for an item, and that has the bibliographic stuff. The item may appear as an attachment. There may also be notes as an that are attachments. So, for example, if something's in there because Megan Katsumi had it as a reference at the kind of last slide of her presentation, right, then there's a note stuck on it, if I entered it, that says, reference provided by Megan Katsumi in this presentation. Right? So it added a little bit of extra material, and that can also be used for people adding materials as we continue to grow this. You can add a note saying why you added it or what you want to call people's attention to. Okay, new this year, we're using the library to support the communique. So many of the communiques, the communique has a number of footnotes that rather than linking to one specific reference, which would have made for a lot of footnotes, some of those footnotes go to a collection, a sub-collection in the library that gathers, say, all the different the materials that we have that provide some particular faceting of ontology characteristics relevant to requirements. And again, those can continue to grow, and we hope that they will. So how to use it? You can browse and search it without a login. You're very much encouraged to get a login. Find the group, join it. If you're using a username that isn't obviously any member of this community, if you can attach a note or email me separately saying who this username is, so I know it's actually somebody from here, so I can add you to the group when you send the join request, that would be great. We have it login restricted for editing only because trolls, not because there's any further restriction on members' activities. So once you're in the group, you can add and edit items, attachments, notes, sub-collections, tags, and so forth. And that is all.
Yep. Right on time. So I think anything that the other co-chairs would like to say here at this moment? Or nothing? Just see you at dinner. Dinner is 6. Tomorrow, I think it's 9 o'clock. Yes. And I don't think lunch is being provided tomorrow, I guess. Yeah, so you're on your own, okay? Yeah. No. You have your badges. Only thing tomorrow when you come in, you have to show your driver's license. And when getting back, if you want to recycle it, leave it there. Otherwise, take it home and recycle it. So that's about it. And I think 6:30 p.m. at Grover's Growlers. And I'm going to bring my van around. It will take about 4 or 5 people if people want rides. Otherwise, if you have your car. Pardon? Yeah, we have about 30 people reserved, okay? So, yeah, I guess we could go there if you want to. It depends on people around here. Pardon, yeah. Yeah, we got the law. Yeah. It's a pretty nice place. And if you actually go before 7 o'clock, you can get, I think, drinks, beer for $2 or something like that. And it's a pretty good deal. So maybe if you want to go early, I don't know. Pardon? Yeah, 6:30 is still before 7, so, I mean. Pardon? Yeah, I mean, I thought that people have, they're in hotels and things like that, you go there, kind of change, and then from there you can go, but then if, I don't know how, what is the process here in terms of who's staying in the hotel close by, who wants to go to the hotel, and then go there. Pardon? Well, what are you going to do? Officially. Oh, yeah, actually, how many people need rights anyway here? Yes. I think it looks like everything. Michael requires. Pardon? Sponsor a race? So you want to go already now? Start with the beer? Or you want, where are you staying? Perfect, sir. No, okay. Fine. Yeah. If you are there by, well, yeah, 6 o'clock or so, if you start here, it's okay. By 6:15, at most, you'll be there. I don't think they care if you're a little early. We reserved for 30 people. I told my, we have only 17 here. I told my secretary that we are 20, so that's the thing. We're giving maybe another 2 or 3 people during the month. Okay, then, so we will, let's see, officially end the thing, and then you got to make your statements, Peter. It's officially ended now, or no? Okay. Yeah. Well, for those of you online, we'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, and then we're going to start with, I think, Olivia's keynote on in the medical domain. The idea is to have 3 different domains. You saw the materials, the financial, and then you're going to see the medical domain. And I think there's a... But that one other thing is that tomorrow's session is going to be in portrait room, not here. Just it's right there, okay? Pardon? Right here. Right opposite. Just opposite the cafeteria. That's where we traditionally used to hold this thing, but this time we couldn't get it. Well, this is a much better place. Even a webcast here.
you go ahead and